For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Welcome in to another edition of the Jamie Sports News Podcast. I'm Bennett Conlon. I'm joined by Jack Fitzpatrick. And we're breaking down essentially the end of the JMU sports season. I think there might be like an individual track and field performer still kicking, but for the most part, everybody's done.
Bet Online is your number one source for all of your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest player reports for this year's pro basketball playoffs. Bet Online is always your sports information destination. We have you covered for all of your sports wagering needs. Basketball, MLB, NHL, hockey, right down to UFC and boxing, even golf. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to get all of your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games. You can play right from the comfort of your couch on your phone. So head to betonline.ag today. Use your mobile device too. Just head online to betonline.ag and get in on the action. Be sure to use our promo code BELIEVE when you sign up. That's promo code BLEAV to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So you want to get started with a $100 first-time deposit, they'll hook you up with $50 free. Use promo code BELIEVE. Bet Online, that's where the game starts. Yeah, it's kind of a sad, this is the sad part of the calendar. Sports are done. Baseball's wrapped up. Normally we have softball to lean on and like a super or something, but that's not in our cards this year. We'll break down probably a little bit of track and field while talking like weird football predictions over this summer. We have a few content pieces coming over this summer. We're going to rank the top five quarterbacks in JMU history. I'm going to try and do that. I've had a lot of people. I'm still finalizing how I'm going to do it. I've had like four or five different like thoughts on how I was going to do it. I was going to like create a formula and value wins and passing yards a certain amount, and then postseason success would be a certain value. Then I was just going to go off of eye test, but the last time I did eye test, I got destroyed on Twitter and I was called a disgrace to the university. So I don't know if I want to do the eye test again. We'll have the re-ranking of the top athletes in JMU history as well coming down the pike. So a lot of great stuff coming, but unfortunately, I think this will probably be our last podcast, and then we'll go to probably like a once every other week type of vibe, and then maybe emergency pods if, you know, Kurt Cignetti gets hired to go coach West Virginia or something
in like August. it'll be a slower summer, but exciting times to regroup and get ready for football. But before then, plenty to talk about.
What do you want to start with? We have a few things we can start with today. We can go baseball. The curious case of JMU baseball will be that segment. We could go women's tennis, quick newser on that, or we could go quick lacrosse and then dive in and save baseball for the last.
I like that. I like tennis, lacrosse,
baseball. Yeah. We'll finish with negativity.
Yeah. So tennis, they've lost their head coach, Shelley. And I'm Jadon. Jadon. Yes. Once I hear it, I can do it right away. But then
I've been yelled at by Dom way too many times for messing that name up, which is a shame because she is arguably in her time since coming to JMU, the best, if not the second best coach behind Shelley Clays.
Yeah. I think JMU announced, so she's taking the job at Kentucky. So losing the tennis coach to Kentucky, which is tough, women's tennis coach. Because she had so much success, JMU is going to begin a national search immediately for a new head coach. I have to think that starts with people named Shelley, given
the success. You got to think the national search is going to start in like Hawaii or Alaska, and they're going to work backwards too. Because what?
Yeah, Bourne starts far out, and then over time, months later, he'll get geographically closer.
I love when they say, we're going to start a a national search. Like, okay, I wasn't expecting you to do like the Valley only.
Yeah, so I kind of expected that, but at the same time, like, you probably got some pretty good options nearby, I would guess. I don't know. We'll see what, we'll see what they end up doing. But they were awesome. They were awesome the last few years. So hopefully they can keep that going. And obviously, congrats. JMU's had a pretty solid history here recently of coaches moving on to some bigger jobs, some Power Five jobs. Mickey Dean comes to mind. Kenny Brooks, right, leading Virginia Tech women's basketball to a Final Four. So interested to see what Kentucky does under her watch.
Yeah, and she goes back to the SEC. She was at Alabama. I believe she played tennis there at Alabama. So it will be interesting to see kind of her career trajectory going from started in Middle Tennessee, then went on to JMU, and now is back in the SEC with Kentucky. So maybe trying to prime her way to get back to Alabama or something along those lines. But great for her to move on. And I think we've talked about it, but especially like with football and stuff like that, I think JMU needs to view themselves as that stepping stone. And I think if they can lean into that baseball, things can get really exciting for a lot of these teams.
Yeah, I think there was somebody who commented, I don't remember exactly who, but they commented like it kind of stinks to be a stepping stone, but at the same time, it's like shows they're doing things well in regards to like transfers and coaches.
Yeah.
And I think the crazy thing is like most places are stepping stones. Like if Alabama, like if Nick Saban retires and they offer Lane Kiffin the head coaching job, he would leave. He would go SEC to Alabama. Like there's very few programs that aren't like in a way a stepping stone. It's like the Alabamas, the Ohio State, some of these top tier. And then if you look at like certain baseball programs, obviously sports have different like powers and stuff. So it's not crazy that JMU is a stepping stone, but I also think there are coaches that enjoy staying there for a long time. Like Shelly Clays has been here maybe longer than she could have been, right? Like she easily could have left for a new gig by now if she wanted
to. Morgan, the field hockey coach as well, has been here since like 1992.
Yeah, she won a national title, left, and then like came back. And it's like, okay, like I imagine her national title pedigree and putting JMU like within the top 25. If she wanted to, she could leverage it into something else.
For sure. Moving from there into lacrosse. Lacrosse season is done. A fantastic final game. Final score, I think it makes it a little bit more lopsided than I think it kind of was. But at the same time, it was kind of a lopsided game. They fell to Syracuse in the quarterfinals, 13-7. They went on kind of this, their goals came in bunches. They went for like a 20-minute scoreless streak after opening up a 1-0 lead, and then Syracuse built up a 4-1 lead. They went on a 4-goal explosion with 2 minutes left in the first half. They were up one, and then Syracuse hung like 3 goals in 2 minutes to take a 2-goal lead into the halftime break. And then JMU just really wasn't able to get anything going until late into the fourth quarter. And at that point, it was kind of too little too late. So they ended up falling by 6. It was kind of a 4-goal game for much of the second half. But, I mean, quarterfinals, that is a fantastic way for the season to go. They were kind of very dark horse national title contenders. We were holding on to hope, but they were essentially, you know, I mean, they were there for a half. And then wheels kind of came off in the third quarter a bit, got them back in the fourth quarter. So if you think they play a really well-rounded, you know, full, I don't know how long a lacrosse game is. 60 minutes?
I think it's 60, yeah.
The sports always change on me. But like if they played a full 60 minutes, you imagine they maybe have gone to Cary, North Carolina tomorrow and played tomorrow in the Final Four. But they didn't. And I think they're reloaded for next year. If Isabella Peterson decides to come back, they'll probably be in the same exact spot.
Yeah, they should be loaded, assuming Peterson does come back. She's got eligibility left. They lose some key players, Cap Buchanan in goal. Maybe Durkin is awesome defensively. So there's Lizzie Fox is pretty good in midfield. So they're losing some players, but they return a ton. And they're pretty much, you know, they're good every year. Like they just sort of reload. They recruit well, which should only kind of get better since they've been so nationally relevant here. If you're a women's lacrosse player in high school and you're good, like you imagine they're kind of on the radar. So I think that's exciting. It sort of seemed like draw controls were the one area that got them, like in the postseason. Even in the AAC title game loss to Florida, they were kind of getting dominated in the draw control. So that's one, if they can sort of develop there and keep getting better. And some of it is like, I think Maddie Epke did a lot of it. She's a true freshman who was handling a lot of the draw controls and was pretty good throughout a lot of the season. I think it's when you get to like top 5 caliber teams that maybe there were some like she was losing a few competitive draw controls, but you imagine over the next few seasons, she would only get better. I think they're primed for more success would be my guess.
Yeah. And the draw controls really, it was the Maryland game. They got down 4 goals because they couldn't get a draw control. And then all of a sudden they kind of flipped the script. And that's when they were able to rattle off that comeback, put up 5 unanswered and win that game by 1 against Syracuse. I think they were getting beat by like, I think Syracuse was up like 10-1 in the draw control to start the game, something insane. And then all of a sudden, Jamie started to get a few back. And that's when they started scoring goals. Crazy concept. When you have the ball, you can score goals. But yeah, overall, fantastic season. I'm very excited. And when your offense is averaging like 13 goals a game, and if Peterson comes back, your star is averaging more than a hat trick each game, not to diminish anything Kate Buchanan's doing, but I think you can afford you don't need necessarily a first team All-American like Kat Buchanan is. That just is a little cherry on top of the cake, but I think this team's poised for a lot of greatness.
I think so too. I'm fascinated to see how the program kind of develops. They didn't have anyone on the roster as a transfer. I don't know if like women's lacrosse doesn't have the most active portal, but it seems like with so many other sports being kind of a destination for transfers, it seems like it's interesting that the spring sports, maybe less than some other sports, and there's some exceptions, right, with like Alyssa Humphrey being a pretty big important part of the softball team. But I'm interested to see how the portal impacts those spring teams in the next like 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, baseball transfer season gets fun.
It really does.
If they can land some of those, so it's transfers, maybe they can land a new coach.
Time to get into it.
You start us off. You lay the table. Okay. You set the table. I don't know why I said lay the table. You set the table here, and then we'll just take it wherever our minds take us on this, because we have to get to the bottom of the curious case of JMU baseball.
I'm trying to keep opinion out of it here for setting the table. 31-25, 15-13 in regular season conference games, then 1-2 in the conference tournament. They had an opening win over Old Dominion, an elimination game. They pitched really well, 1-2-1. Kind of overwhelmed by Southern Miss, which I don't think is too much opinion there. I think that's kind of how the game went. They threw, who's their starter? Is it Will Hall? Tanner Hall. I think, was the Sunbelt Pitcher of the Year. Threw a complete game, 3 hits, 1 earned run, 9 strikeouts, no walks. Dude was mowing them down. Really impressive stuff from Southern Miss. And then they play App State in another elimination game Thursday. Kind of a roller coaster game. It went back and forth. Pretty competitive game. Fun game. They end up losing 8-7. Gave up some late runs. Made a push there. And then App State had a leaping grab like at the warning track. I think it was Kyle Novak hit a fly ball to left field. Great catch by the App State left fielder. Ends the game with runners who, if the ball gets down, you're scoring at least 1, maybe 2, maybe you go on to win. It doesn't matter. They lose that. They end the year 31-25. They did a lot of the damage, which we'll get into, against quad 4 teams. They had losing records against quad 1, quad 2, quad 3. Quad 1, I think, was 1-9 after the Southern Miss one. They were 11-12, if I'm not mistaken, with the latest one in quad 2. And then they had a weird gap where they like didn't play quad 3 and played a ton of quad 4. So it was like 1-2 quad 3 and then 18-2 quad 4. I don't know. It's also, I guess, so that was this year, right? So maybe they exceeded Sunbelt expectations. It was the 8th year of Marlon Eikenberry. They're 184-184, which is crazy. Under Marlon Eikenberry, they have a 12-game under 500 conference record dating back to the CAA and this 1 year of the Sun Belt. And then in his career, he's 4-17 dating back to VMI in conference tournament games. So he's never won a conference tournament. He's never finished first in the regular season. He's never made an NCAA regional in 19 seasons as a head coach.
He's never finished that better than.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Third in a conference.
Yes, that's true.
These are... Okay, so we'll focus on this year first, right? They were 13-23. You mentioned it against quad one, quad two, quad three. They finished the year, with a winning record in conference play. Yeah, they finished with over 30 wins, 31 wins. But let's be honest, 18 of those are against quad four teams. That's not good. More than 50% of your wins this season came against terrible non-conference teams. And then you kind of make the year look a little bit better with a 15-13 mark in conference play. You still lost a series against Coastal, who I know Coastal's a ranked team, but if you want to be considered kind of that top tier, middle top tier of the Sun Belt, I don't know if you can necessarily lose a series at home against Coastal. Maybe I'm being too mean, but you lose a series against South Alabama. You go 2-1 against Georgia State. That's cool. Southern Miss blows you out and run rules you. You sweep Louisiana, but Louisiana's in a down year. I'm just going through the schedule. You lose the series against App State. You never win back-to-back series until the final final three weekends of the series. But you win two of your final three, but that's it. I don't know if I'm making a lot of sense. It wasn't a great year. You didn't beat consistently the top half of the league. You just beat up on the bad teams. ODU is coming off of a really good CUSA 2022, but this 2023 team was underperformed by every single metric. There were high hopes for them coming into the season, but they just didn't live up to it. Cool. You beat them in a single elimination game. You already had destroyed them 25-6 early in the year. By the way, you couldn't win that series because you lost 8-5 on Sunday. If you had won that game against ODU, you're not in that play-in game. Then you go against Georgia Southern. You go 1-1 on the doubleheader. The media, everyone around this team is pounding their chest that this team is so much better than we expected. They went 1-1 in a doubleheader, and then they couldn't win on Sunday, so they had to play in that play-in game. You had three different opportunities to not play in that play-in game, and you couldn't get a win.
Yeah, that's true. They had a lot of opportunity. I think the thing that's interesting, so for more setting of the table, they signed Eikenberry to a two-year deal last offseason. So this was the first of the 2 years. Jeff Bourne did a media availability the 18th of May. So this is before the Georgia Southern series and before the Sun Belt tournament. And he said he was pleased with baseball because he was worried going into the year that they were not going to be able to hold up in Sun Belt play. So he sounded relatively pleased. Again, this is before, I think going into that series, they were the sixth seed, which would have been a not playing in that first elimination game.
And not having to face Southern Miss.
If you're the six, you would have gotten, you would have been an App State spot where they played Troy and almost beat Troy in that first non-elimination game. I think Coastal and Southern Miss are kind of rolling through right now, but it's one where you want to avoid those teams as long as possible. And obviously some of it's out of your control, but if you find ways to win, they would have avoided us the six, at least.
Heck, if you sweep ODU and then you can go 2-1 against Georgia Southern, you might be in, I don't know how the standings completely shook out, but you may have been in contention for that five seed, depending on how
close to that. Yeah.
Carry on. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all correct. It's just interesting because he was pleased with baseball, but then baseball lost for the final six. I don't think that would make him more pleased with baseball, dropping down the seeding and then not being able to really advance deep into the conference tournament. I don't think he's going to move on from Eikenberry because of the two-year deal and the fact that they return. I think it's from pitching standpoint, it's the six top guys in terms of innings pitched. And then you have Fenwick, Trimble, and some other important hitters. So my guess would be he gives him another year, which would be his ninth season. The way I kind of view it is that he has to make the NCAA tournament next year, or I'm really confused as to what they're doing. If you can go a decade without making it and then be renewed your contract, to me, that's way too low expectations. And I think that maybe the most important thing that I would like to say today is that there's a subsection of fans that were amped that JMU had exceeded Sunbelt expectations. Isn't that kind of the problem? JMU was picked to finish 10th in the Sunbelt. I think they finished a game out of 10th. Yeah. Maybe it was more. I think it was a game because it's the same in the win column and then two in the loss column, which I think that'd be a half and a half. I think it's a game. So a game ahead of Old Dominion, one of those regular season games goes the other way. or whatever, something happens and you're maybe you're 10th. So they were not like way above 10th. They finished in the middle of the pack, beat up on bad non-conference teams, really struggled against NCAA tournament caliber teams. I just don't like, how is that a win in 8 years? Like maybe it was a, like better than you thought. That's kind of the problem. If in the eighth year of a coach, you don't think they could finish in the middle of the pack
yep.
in a conference they're joining, when every other program went into the Sun Belt and was like, hey, like we're here and we're a force now, at least for the most part, every other program, I would say.
Men's basketball going into the last 2 weeks of the season had an opportunity to win the Sun Belt.
Yep.
Women's basketball won the Sun Belt. If it wasn't for the postseason ban, football would have been in the Sun Belt championship game.
Yep.
Lacrosse.
Women's tennis played in the championship. Yep. Men's soccer played in the championship. Lacrosse won the AAC, right? Like there's a, I think Noah Fleischman of the DNR tweeted, who I accidentally unfollowed on Twitter the other day and then refollowed immediately. My apologies. But he tweeted, I think I retweeted it. Yeah, he tweeted like every team's record winning percentage and then their finish. And it was just super impressive where it was like, men's basketball, they did get to the semis and like played pretty well. They were what, 12-6 in conference, which is pretty darn good. Women's tennis got to the final. Softball had a down year, but was like kind of still on the same level as baseball, being like a top 100 RPI team that was just in the middle of the Sun Belt. And that's like a big time down year. But they also have like a true freshman recruit that we've talked about in Kirsten Fleet that's supposed to be a superstar.
And they have a freshman KK Mathis who's like going to be, they're going to be good.
They're very close to being like a Sun Belt contender with Louisiana, which is playing in a super regional. It's
hosting a super regional.
It's just hard to see like all these teams competing at a really high level. And then baseball, which I think both of us think is very important to JMU for the Valley because of what the Sun Belt, like how it values baseball, to have a team that's just average every year and be like, oh, wow, look at how good they are. They're not that good.
If this was Eikenberry's second season, heck, his third season, I would be like, I love the trajectory of this team. It looks like they are taking the next steps. They are going, he's taking them to a place. This is his eighth year. He is going into next season as his ninth year at the helm of JMU. It'll be his, what, 20th year as a coach overall since going back to VMI. Never has gotten to a regional. And I'm not saying it's easy to get a regional. Like, you do have to win a postseason conference tournament, but like, he doesn't have close to a winning record in the postseason. He doesn't have a winning record at JMU. He is aggressively average. He's below 500 in his conference play. And the CAA and Sun Belt are kind of similar conferences. And the fact that they're very top heavy and they kind of trail off pretty significantly as you get to around the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, 10th team. And JMU couldn't beat up on the bad teams in that conference. They really couldn't beat up on the Sun Belt lower portion of the conference. And the fact that like we're sitting here saying, yeah, exactly what you said, this was a good year. Why does baseball get this pass each and every year? If this was football, we would be calling for his job. You mentioned this. Kurt Cignetti lost to Sam Houston. There was a Twitter space within an hour of that game finishing saying, fire Kurt Cignetti. Like, why is that the standard for football? But for baseball, it's, oh, good job, boys. You'll get them next year. Good job. I love the trajectory. We've had the same freaking trajectory for the last 8 years. This man has coached Kevin Kelly, who is in the major leagues. You have Nick Robertson, who is on the cusp of making it as a reliever in the Dodgers organization into the show. You've had so many guys get drafted. You had a top, what was he, a top 10 pick last year in DeLauder?
Yeah, he was first round, right?
You've had talent come in. So, like, where's the disconnect? And at this point, you've shown me you can get the talent in. You had six guys this season with 100 at-bats or more that had an on-base percentage of 400 or higher. Your offense is there. You've brought in the talent. You've had years where your pitching staff was elite near the top of the CAA. You've had individual pitchers that have been the best, if not one of the best pitchers in your conference, and you just haven't been able to put it together. That tells me the issue is not recruiting. The issue is coaching. This is so reminiscent of men's basketball. Lewis Rowe brought in Matt Lewis, brought in all of these really high-end players, Dwight Wilson, and he just couldn't win. To me, that says coaching is the problem.
It's just like, I don't know, it's hard to, they return some key pitchers and some key hitters and stuff. And I know some fans are like, I don't know if you can't move on because people might leave for the portal. They had 21 pitchers pitch this year. One of them had a sub-4 ERA. Like, you're not going to win in the Sun Belt if you don't have, like, an ace or, like, reliable relievers. Like, it's just, you need more pitching depth. You need more hitting depth. So, like, he's definitely made some recruiting inroads. It's like he's got to do more of it. But it's also, how the heck is he supposed to do more of it when you give him these little contracts? Like, that's, if you're a baseball player in a family who does any, like, tiny bit of research on a school, you're probably going to look into the coach and look into the contract, especially in a sport like college baseball, which is kind of a little less Power Five hoppy. Like, there is the stepping stone stuff, but there's also dudes who will just, like, lead a program for, like, 3 decades, even though it's not a Power Five team. And they're like, yep, this is my job. Like, I like the area. I recruit well. We win. It's cool. Like, it's what I do.
We make a regional, like, every 3 years. Like, that.
Yeah.
That so should, like, be JMU's goal, honestly.
Yes. And you could have, like, if you're, I don't know, like, Dallas Baptist, that coach seems pretty happy. Like, I think at some point that dude turned down, like, Baylor's job. Like, it's just kind of a weird sport in terms of how coaches view things. And it's one, like, if you can go somewhere like there where they have stability and a coach they trust who looks like he's staying in place, maybe more so than other sports even, it's weird to look at JMU and be like, wait, Bourne gave him a 1-year extension after the 2020 season. He gave him another 1-year extension after the 2021 season. And then he gave him a 2-year extension after 2022. It's like he just keeps doing, like, these little trials to see how they'll do. And they're kind of the same team every year with a limited sample size because of COVID in 2 of those years. But it's, I don't know what he's expecting, Bourne's expecting in terms of, like, them to get it going. But they're going to have to, like, make a regional and then give him a longer term deal that would make sense for recruiting and the long term stability of the program. Or they just need to move on.
So since he got that 1-year extension out of 2020, which I think we both kind of agreed, okay, COVID was a weird year, give him one more year type of thing. He went 2-8 against quads 1-3, 9-9 against quad 4. Mind you, that was Chase DeLauder. That was when Chase DeLauder was at his height. That was when Chase DeLauder didn't get hurt. So you're playing with one of the best players in the CAA. And you go 2-8 against quads 1-3. 2022, he gets another 1-year extension. They go 9-18 against quads 1-3. They finish that year off. He gets a 2-year extension and he goes 13-23 against quads 1-3. And we mentioned it at the top. We've mentioned it a few times. Really bad against tournament teams, not great against RPI top 100, and got 58% of their wins this season against quad 4.
Can I read you a Jeff Bourne quote from after the 2-year extension and get your reaction?
Hit me.
Baseball has been a challenging sport to evaluate over the course of the last 2 or 3 years. Every sport has been impacted by COVID and the overall unique circumstances we've navigated. But baseball is so rooted in day-to-day routine and repetition, which became completely disrupted for over 2 years. This year, there are so many bright spots early in the year. That would be the 2022 season.
Yeah, non-conference, which doesn't freaking matter.
Before the team became decimated by injuries to key players. Marlin addressed some challenges during his tenure.
What? No. Your job as a coach is to deal with injuries.
Marlin addressed some challenges during his tenure and positioned the team for success before the rug got pulled out. As we transition to one of the nation's top baseball conferences in the Sun Belt, we look forward to Marlin's potential to recover from these last few years and keep building upwards.
So he was talking about 2022, the rug getting pulled out from under them.
Yes. What? I think it was referring mostly to DeLauder missed the end of the season.
I mean, they weren't good to start the year either. They lost one against Quinnipiac. You got swept against number 11, Florida State. You got swept against number 10, Tennessee. You lost a series against Morehead State. You went 2-1 against Winthrop. The third game on Sunday, it took you 11 innings to win. That's the start of the year. What rug got pulled out from under you? You weren't good from start to finish.
I'm also very confused with the whole, like, potential to recover from these last few years. His first 4 years, they went 24-31, 24-27, 26-26, 31-26. Then in 2022, another full season, they were 27-26. And this year they were 31-25. They're not really going upward. Like, they might win like a game or two more.
It's all because of their non-conference schedule. Instead of scheduling Tennessee twice, like they did last year, they scheduled UMass Lowell.
It's it's ridiculous to look at like total wins and not see how they've kind of failed to be competitive enough against top teams. I guess my thing is just like, would any other sport get a pass other than like golf for going a decade without sending a team to an NCAA regional? And it's not like field hockey either, where field hockey has like what, the 20 team tournament or whatever it is, where it's like ridiculous to get in. If you don't get your auto bid, you're screwed because you're not in the Power Five. 64 teams get in the field. The Sun Belt sending like at least three this year with the potential for five. You got to put yourself in the mix. And I don't have any belief that they're going to do that.
Hey, the road to Omaha, though, it started against ODU and it ended very quickly 2 days later after that. Like,
it was a delusional post. Yeah,
it's just insane that they were essentially two and done. Like, I don't, maybe this is me being too pessimistic, but I don't count the play-in game as a win. Like, that's not a postseason win. To me, that was an extended regular season game that you had to win to make the tournament. And they did. And then once they made the tournament, they lost the two games they needed. They lost. They lost two games. Eikenberry hasn't won a postseason game in a really long time. They haven't made a regional since 2011. This team has not made the NCAA postseason in over a decade. That's not acceptable. This is a team that has had MLB talent. This is a team that has had professional talent. This is a team that they redesigned their entire stadium in the hopes of hosting a regional. Since they renovated Eagle Field, they haven't sniffed the NCAA tournament.
It's weird because it's like, what trajectory were they on? And I feel like he's getting a pass because of COVID. Like that first COVID year in 2020, when it got really cut short, they started the year getting swept by NC State. They lost a series to Rider, lost one game to Rider, lost a series to High Point. And then they ended the year with a win over Maryland 4-2 on the road, which was, I guess, somewhat exciting for them. And they had a decent team that included Chase DeLauder. But it's like, I don't know, like they didn't really do anything. That didn't seem different than a lot of other years. It's hard for me to look at what he's done and be like, yeah, like this is getting turned around. It's a pretty big sample. He's been a head coach for 19 seasons, 8 at JMU. I know some were cut short, but like, what more do you need to see to think like we're not making NCAA tournaments under the guy?
I don't mean to like toot our own horn, but, or at least toot my horn. I think in 2019, 2018, when we started this podcast, I was kind of going on a rampage of putting coaches on the hot seat. included Coach O, which he has proved me very wrong, and I'm very happy.
Yeah, they played their way off the hot seat.
Yeah, that was good for him. Congratulations to him, and I apologize, deeply apologize, Coach O, if you're listening to this. I'm sorry. I just was angry. But Eikenberry hasn't, if anything, his seat was hot. It's gotten hotter, and it's on fire right now. And Jeff Bourne is watching Kurt Cignetti coach a football team while one of his coaches needs to be extinguished.
I'd also like somebody to ask him, because some of the questions to Bourne are like, baseball exceeded expectations. He's like, yeah, we're thrilled about it. Somebody's got to ask him what the expectations are. Like, why is the expectation for the baseball team to like barely get above 500 with a soft schedule when like that didn't fly for Matt Brady? That didn't fly for Lewis Rowe. Like when they were struggling, like Bourne.
Rowe has more conference tournament wins than Eikenberry does.
Some of that is that he automatically qualifies, I guess. But it's like,
I don't care. he was the last seed every single year and would manage to pick up wins. Matt, I think Brady's, he has three team, wins.
Matt Brady's last team, his last team won more than 20 games. He had an NCAA tournament appearance when he got canned. Like,
he technically has an NCAA tournament win. I can't count that because it was a playing right. game. And if I'm not counting Eikenberry's playing, I can't count Brady.
I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's really working. I think he's going to give him another year. But to me, it's like if he doesn't make the NCAA tournament next year, start over. And they probably should have started over before. It just doesn't make any sense.
They should have started over coming out of COVID.
That nobody's asking, like, why is that okay? Like, why do you think it's going to change based off of a sample size that says it won't. Like, that would be an interesting thing for Bourne to answer. He's done a great job, but sometimes he gets a little bit too revered where it's like, man, this guy can't do anything wrong. It's like, well, I mean, he's like a human being. He's a normal person. He's a very good athletic director, but like, you could still ask him fair questions. It's a fair question. If Marlon Eikenberry, like, why is he your guy? When, I don't know. It's also weird to be like, they won 30 plus games in their first year in the Sun Belt. It's like, no, they didn't win 30 Sun Belt games, right? They played some garbage teams, of which there are a few in the Sun Belt.
If my math is correct here, they didn't win a single non-conference game against a team that wasn't in quad four. All of their non-conference games. Who?
They took one of three from South Carolina Upstate.
Okay, cool.
So they went 1-8 non-conference against Q1 through three.
And they went 18-2 against quad four.
They beat the living crap out of quad four teams, which doesn't really mean a lot to me in an eighth year of a coach who has done nothing previously.
When you're playing in the Sun Belt.
They got to figure it out. It's frustrating. And the fact that no one questions Bourne on it is really infuriating.
And I'm not saying JMU has to go out and be a AP top 25 consistently ranked team like Southern Miss and Coastal, who won a national championship not too long ago. I'm not saying they have to be on their level. But I'm saying when Coastal comes to Harrisonburg every other year, the Chanticleers shouldn't just chalk that up as a 2-1 weekend.
They went 1-6 against Southern Miss and Coastal this year?
Yes.
Because Southern Miss took four against them, and like, and one of them was competitive. And
they run ruled them on Sunday.
Yeah. Some beat downs in that stretch. It's, you can't, I don't know, eighth year of a head coach and you're like, we did it. We lost to UVA by one. Like, that's just such a like weird loser mindset that I feel like they had this year, where it's like, hey, we hung tough with some teams. Like, no, we really hung tough.
That was their post. The article Noah put out when they lost, the poll quote in his tweet was, we played really tough today. Yeah, you lost and your season's done. I would have rather you played soft and win.
Just ridiculous. Ridiculous. It doesn't mean anything. It's frustrating. On the plus side, JMU football has added a Indiana transfer defensive back, multiple years of eligibility, former four-star prospect. We just got better in the secondary.
Now, can we add some pitching?
We'll see. That's the other thing. In the past, they have had some good players transfer away. So I'm interested to see this offseason if they retain everyone that they're supposed to. And then maybe add some more talent in, because you got to get better. You can't just bring back everyone and be like, run it back. Like, you got to show some sign of improvement or at least development. I don't know.
Offensively, to say the least. Eventually, I mean, they led the conference in batting average. And if it wasn't for the stolen base problem, I think they would have had a better chance. But like, the pitching wasn't good this year. And like, that has to improve next year. Your offense was kind of good. I mean, you were able to hang up some double digit numbers. It was good enough to compete in the Sun Belt. Your pitching staff let you down at times. I think the pitching staff has the capability to take that next step forward, but I believe only three or four pitchers on the staff who saw appearances this year had more strikeouts than innings pitched. So only four averaged one strikeout per inning.
A lot of dudes pitching to contact, which can work and
can also work very well.
Can be frightening in the Sun Belt, right?
Which it can also put you in the top of the ninth inning and App State blasts one down the first base line that happens to hit the bag, goes over the first baseman's head, rolls out to right field, puts up the game winning run. And then the very next hit pitch that you're pitching to contact is just jacked into right field. I mean, that can happen. And then that's a 3-run kind of swing with two pitches.
It's a hard life to live.
Well, anything else you got to add?
No, that's it for me. We'll see what happens.
For Ben Akana, my name's Jack Fitzpatrick. This has been the JMU Sports News Podcast presented by Ben Online.
We'll see. We will see.
Fuck this team, man. Less than a minute. This is going to cut us off as we were complaining about James.
I know.
Fucking suck.
Maybe next year they'll fire him.
I hope. I hope they fire him now.
They should. It'd be fucking sick if he did.
It's 8 fucking years of mediocrity. You are the definition of mediocre. You have a fuck.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.